up out of bed and wave to my homegirls. Hey, Barbie, hey, she's so cool. All dolled up, just playing chess by the pool. Come on, we got important things to do.
What's up, everybody?
It's her and her.
It's Monday, and this is the Maggie Dawn Show. And I'm, of course, the Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm here with my producer, Anya Anastasia Esther. We're actually proximate to each other because I'm in the official WAUK studio today.
Yes, reunited at long last.
Yes.
For the first time.
The next time we can play the reunited song, right?
Yeah.
Because it feels so good.
Yes.
We're doing it. Big news weekend, but before I get to that, I just have to share some of my own personal mumbo jumbo from the weekend because, as all of you who have been listening know, we had the huge sales tax vote in Milwaukee County on Thursday. Really excited. I'm going to be joined at the bottom of the hour by County Board Supervisor Kathleen Vincent, who cast an absolutely critical vote in the county sales tax vote. She voted for that sales tax. She's a brand new supervisor, which I think really is it. Those are folks I like to ask, like, hey, how did you come to that decision? Because she is new to the county. So stay tuned for that. We're also going to ask Kathy some personal questions, so it won't be all shop talk. But obviously, I took Friday off, came in, I got to talk with Kristen Bry and Jane Matinere, Radio Heroes. It was a much lighter weight conversation, although we did dig in. If you didn't have a chance to check that out, you can always listen to the podcast at the Civic Media website. And then going into the weekend, I was so excited. It was Brady Street Festival, which is a lovely conflagration of Eastsiders and folks from out of town in the Milwaukee area, which is always such a positive thing. And to feel the vibe, drag shows and coming together and all kinds of different people. And then on Sunday, some of you may know that I have a 9-month-old puppy named Josephine Margot that I call Finny, and she's a little miniature dachshund because I figured I'm a great big ginormous person. I'm 6 feet tall. If you don't know this, not only will I get a small dog, to wit, dachshund, but a miniature dachshund. And of course, this weekend was German Fest. So that was fun. Had to check that out. I am of German descent. Big shocker there. If you're from Wisconsin, I don't care what color you are, you probably got a little German in you. And they have their now world-famous weenie races and dachshund races, the Wiener races, at German Fest on Sunday. So we were a first-time entrant, given that Finny is only 9 months old, and I signed her up, dutifully registered, got there, was watching, like, all of these people who had their dogs, like, psyched up and ready to go, and there were 17 heats of racing dachshunds. Yeah, Anya.
That's too many dachshunds.
It was a weenie dog festivus for the rest of us. It was so much fun. Little, cute, adorable pups everywhere, a goodly bit of yipping.
Sure, sure.
You can imagine. But little Finny, yeah, so we put her in, and they name the different divisions, right, because they do it by age. So, for example, like the eldest dachshunds, their division was called the Braunschweigers, right, which just, I think I have it. And then, like, they went down in age, the Frankfurter division, and they went through. So you'll never guess what they call the 0 to 1 year old division, which Finny was in.
My guess would be the Vienna sausages heat, that teeny tiny little sausages.
You're super close. I actually am going to call it, like, substantively accurate.
Sure.
They call it the little Smokies.
Yes.
Which I was just like, oh, she's in the little Smokies division. They had these little tiny little bandanas to put on all the dogs so that the guy that was announcing it could say, coming in first, Pink. And it was a goodly distance. Like, with all the people there and all the shouting and the speakers, your dog could not hear you at all. Like, no chance of it. And I have a big mouth. There was absolutely no chance my little weenie was going to hear me through all of that noise. And there were, I think, 8 dogs running in her division. And I thought, listen, if she just runs to me-ish, we'll call this victory, right? Because they're young. And there was so much excitement and dogs were all over the place. And she was excited and doing her thing. And they have a releaser and a catcher of the dog because it's like that far away, you know? So there I am down at the end. I wore a really big, like, bright dress because I figured maybe she'll see me. So what place do you think little Finny came in?
Oh, my goodness. I have full confidence that she came in not last place.
Not last. I love that, Anya. She was not only not last. This little Smokey smoked the competition.
Really?
We will put the video up on my Instagram after the show today. Yeah. She ran as soon as they said ready, set, go. She didn't look around, didn't look at any other dogs, didn't run sideways, even the tiniest bit diagonally. She took off like she was launched. And at full tilt clip with like dog fully extended, because of course I've watched it in slow-mo like 18 times, you know, where the dog's feet are fully out and the ears are completely flapped up in the air, like fully airborne.
Yes.
Her little butt, 11.1 pounds, just was at the vet on Friday. We had her in fighting shape. Took off like she was launched out of a rocket and ran directly to me. No other dog even finished for a few more seconds. I think she would have cleaned up in any of the age races. It was so much fun. I was so proud of her. And then she was done and she sort of like ran up, got her treats for me, and then ran away and kind of like herded the other dogs over the finish line because all the other puppies were just randomly scooting about. So you are going to want to check out my gram and the Twitter, or what are we even calling it now?
X.
X? That's what I'm supposed to refer to Twitter as, is X.
Yeah, they put a big sign on top of the building. It's official.
That apparently is like cutting through blackout shades and bothering everyone in San Francisco.
It's like having a lighthouse in an X shape pointed at your apartment in San Francisco.
That sounds like fun.
Very fun.
It's like a vanity project for a megalomaniac. I mean, talk about a single-handed undermining of a corporate brand because X is so much more. It even sounds dumb. I'm going to X you. Lame. I'm just calling it Twitter.
You should. Because like, what else would we call a tweet? A jeet? A tweet? I don't know how
I'm
going to
X you? That's what I mean. It's so dumb. Well, at least he picked some really bright colors and a catchy logo. Oh, wait, no. No, it's black and white and a normal looking X. Anyways, I'll put the pictures up on the Twit, the X, and Instagram and Facebook. I'll get the video up there of little Finny showing everybody how it's done at the Vino races. Oh, I have a winner wiener.
A winning wiener.
A winning wiener. She was just so precious. But lots of news happening. So I had to take up some minutes for Finn because I had no idea what to expect. And she killed it. And I did employ some race strategy.
Okay.
You know, if you want to win, don't do what everybody else is doing.
Right, right.
And I did not do that. I'm not going to give away the strategy.
I was about to ask.
No, lest someone cop it. Next year's race class that she'll be in, that's the big one. It's the 1 to 3 year olds. Mm-hmm. They ran three heats of those.
Wow.
Yesterday. So here's what. Last week, I spent a long time, 3 days, and then a little bit more on Thursday, bringing together what we know Donald Trump is going to be charged with in the January 6th indictment by Jack Smith, which includes 18 U.S.C. 242. And I explained that these were provisions enacted after the Civil War to protect Black Americans' civil rights and their right to vote. They were first enforced. These are criminal statutes. Really, in modern history, coming out of the 60s and 70s to fight back against the KKK and other violent groups that were effectively using the imagery of white supremacy, as well as killing people and lynching people to intimidate people out of voting. That's what it was about, voter intimidation at the end of the day. And that it is meaningful that Donald Trump is being charged under a criminal federal statute that is seeking to protect the franchise of black voters, because that is what all of this is about. But of course, the Republican Party's attack on voting rights is never unidimensional. It's not just about black people. And it's amazing. It was as if I set it up last week, Anya, that today and over the weekend, a whole bunch more news happened that also is about Republicans trying to keep us from employing our franchise, from using our right to vote. And I want to start with the local one, which was the lawsuit filed by Janelle Branchon. And she sued the wrong people because she's an idiot, a conspiratorial wingnut. Sued the wrong people. So the case was dismissed today. And so this is news today, came out at about noon. But here's what her lawsuit was seeking to do. It was basically seeking to stop the counting of overseas military ballots. So here you have the GOP trying to stop the count of one sort of absentee ballot. So, yeah, if you're black or brown, if you served in the military, the GOP says, no, we really don't. We want less of you voting. Which, again, strategically to me makes no sense, because all else being equal, one would assume that Republicans would tend to get a few more votes from the military just going on sort of long-held generalizations. I don't think that that holds up under any scrutiny. So, yeah, that happened today. Scott Walker gets blown up in a Vice article today because little Scotty Zero is getting paid nearly $1 million a year to do nothing. And what that article is basically about at the end some is the GOP doesn't want college-age people voting either. And they've been saying this quiet part out loud for some time, too. Now, they don't like it when they get called on and they try to backtrack out of it, which is what Vice talks about in the article. But yeah, per Scott Walker, drinking age and voting age should be the same. That'd be 21, Scotty. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Go get that app. Super fun, because then you can listen to the Brewers on any of our sister stations in Chippewa Falls, and I believe also in Oshkosh, the Eagle. And really excited that this fall we're going to have the Badgers and the Packers here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you are interested in advertising or becoming a sponsor for the Badgers and Packers coverage that's going to be on the Civic Media Network, feel free to give our advertising team a call. Anya's going to get me the number so I can drop that, or she'll just interrupt me and let everybody know what that number is. Don't worry about it, because you can always call the main line, 844-967-2789. We will take your info and get you in touch with whomever you need to talk to. So I'm super excited about that. We're going to have Brewers, Badgers, and the Packers. You can listen to all your favorite Wisconsin sports teams here on the Civic Media Radio Network. So big ups to Mike Crute for getting that done. Very cool fall season. Fall football season we're going to have to look forward to. By the way, anybody think that Aaron Rodgers needs to worry less about who might be picking on his coaches? I don't get that random piece of news from today. I'm not going to talk about it, but boy, the guy's got... He apparently thinks professional football coaches need to be stuck up for. Whatever. Okay. Back to the voting thing, because that's what matters. I've made a case, I think, pretty comprehensively that the GOP, for time in memoriam, has not wanted black and brown people to vote. Janelle Brantigin's ostensibly trying to speak for the GOP, and while leaning into all manner of garbage election conspiracy theories because she's an idiot, also trying to stop the counting of absentee ballots from our military overseas. For shame. Scott Walker and the GOP, this is Ron Johnson, and the whole lot of them have been agitating for raising the voting age to the drinking age, 21. This has happened in all sorts of manners and times and places over the last year. Yeah, because young people are voting for Democrats. So when we can't beat them on the issues, we'll just raise the voting age. Are you detecting a theme here? Less voting, not more voting. Making it harder to vote, not easier. Targeting minority groups and others. And it doesn't just stop there. Oh, Vivek Ramaswamy, one of these fringe GOP presidential wannabes. Yeah, he thinks the age should be raised to 25 and there should be like a test or something. I don't know why they say these things out loud with microphones in their face. Stupid. Require a constitutional amendment. That is not happening. And here's the other thing. I've always said, look at what the GOP, especially here in Wisconsin, if you want to know about voting rights and which party stands for protecting our constitutional right to exercise the franchise, the GOP in 2021, following the election, so this is still with an Evers-controlled governorship, enacted nearly 25 bills that basically were trying to make it as hard as humanly possible for elderly folks and disabled people to vote, with all kinds of language that could mean a whole bunch of different things, but that assigned criminal penalties to that. You know what laws I want really specific, Anya?
What?
Criminal election laws.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, it kind of does. Ugh. So if you're elderly or know someone who's elderly, if you're disabled or know someone who's disabled, if you've got anybody that in your family that's ever served in the military overseas, if you're a young voter, if you know anybody that's college age, if you're black or brown, it's all of a whole. It is to keep these various groups of people from voting. And if we can't do that, we'll gerrymander your vote into irrelevancy. All out there. And here's also what happened. It was not a good couple of legal days for Donald Trump. If you want to join the conversation, 844-967-2789. Not a couple bad few days. So he had sued CNN because they called what he was saying the big lie. Okay? He was saying the big lie was defaming him, because that was originally used in reference to Nazi propaganda. Goebbels, or Goebbels, depending on how you say it, is often credited with saying, if you tell a lie that's big enough and keep repeating it for long enough, people will believe it eventually. Okay, which party do you think might, or is at least most likely to be engaging in that very tactic right now? So anyways, he lost the CNN defamation case. And by the way, the judge that tossed it was a Trump appointee. So save that faux outrage. And he has tried to get Fani Willis kicked, not once, not twice, but three times, tried to stop that special grand jury proceeding and the investigation that's in Georgia. They think they're close to charging it. He's failed in the first two efforts, and the third effort is scheduled for a hearing on August 10th. But the judges that have been hearing this have been unsparing in their criticism of the arguments that Trump has been making to try to stop District Attorney Fani Willis from doing her job. All sorts of allegations about biases. Here's what the judge had to say today in rejecting Trump's second of three attempts to stop the Georgia proceeding. In the future, council is encouraged to follow the professional standard of inquiring with chamber staff about timing and deadlines before burdening other courts with unnecessary and unfounded legal findings. How much time do I got left? 20 seconds?
20 seconds.
All right, I'll give you this nugget. Oh, let's see, where it is. For some, being the subject of a criminal investigation can, a la Rumpelstiltskin, be turned into golden political capital, making it seem more providential than problematic. Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Do not worry. I will tie up the voting rights stuff when we come back after this next segment with a very special guest, my friend and a colleague of mine from Milwaukee County, Supervisor Kathy Vincent. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Kathy. It's a real pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Maggie. It's great to be here.
Talk right into the mic.
All right.
And you can point it right at yourself, too.
It's like old school here, isn't
it? It is. We're doing it the real way in the station today. So before I started on my rant about the Republican attack on people's voting rights, what I was talking about was the sales tax vote and how critical it was for Milwaukee County. And one of the reasons that I was really excited to have you come on to talk about this and share your perspective is that you're a freshman county board supervisor and you were elected in this last cycle. This would have been in 2022 because y'all are elected every 2 years.
Right.
So let's just start there. What has it been like being a freshman part of a legislature faced with such a momentous and contentious and hotly disputed issue like raising the sales tax?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's what I think it's been about 15 months now since I've been in office. I know one of my fellow colleagues on the board has only been in for 84 days, so that was even a bigger decision for her. But for me as a freshman, it was not something I expected was going to come before us, at least not in this first term.
No kidding. I mean, the county and local governments, and again, the shared revenue reforms and sales tax weren't a partisan issue. This was a let's fix local governmental funding issue. But people have been talking about this in the state of Wisconsin for going on like 15 years. So you're here 15 months.
Right.
And right. Decision time.
So, yes, I think in a nutshell, it was a scary decision because this is something I believe that's going to be binding. I know they said there could be a sunset to it, maybe 20 years down the road. Could be in my lifetime. But, you know, once the tax is going to go up, I don't see it coming back down. And so it was a decision I took very seriously and tried to do my homework over the course of the last couple months, just getting as much input from my constituents as possible.
Yeah.
And doing research because I mean, this is a big step we're taking and I wanted to kind of find out what brought us to this point.
Yeah, it's been a long journey. And it's interesting when we look at these various taxes that have come into play here in Milwaukee County, many, many people are familiar with the stadium tax. And the feeling was, well, that puppy's never going away. And it actually did go away this past year, which
right.
was interesting. And now we've got what to do about the Brewers stadium problem yet again. So a lot of folks have very emotional responses to this question that I don't think the fiscal analysis of it was really debatable, right? I think most people, was it your experience in talking to your constituents, Kathy, that most seem to accept the premise that the county is going to have a serious fiscal problem if we don't come up with a revenue source, that they understood that part? Do you think that that's a fair statement, that they understood the fiscal crisis?
Yes, absolutely. It didn't matter which side of this issue people were on. They did understand that the county is in a tough spot right now, as well as the city of Milwaukee. But the people I talked to, they had various reasons why they were in favor or against. And there are some people that just don't want taxes to go up. And they also were concerned about our
our district area, because I am in the southern part of the county, they were not seeing as much come back for the taxes they're already paying, in their opinion. And so they thought, well, this is going to be more money out of my pocket.
Yep.
And I don't know that I'm going to see anything. So I had to, you know, bring in some of our experts, like Joe Lamers,
yep,
to spend time, you know, laying out what it actually would mean and what type of impact it would have on all services across the county.
Yes, really important. And Joe Lamers, for those that don't know, is the budget director for Milwaukee County. And what you're describing, Kathy, I think is this really interesting give and take that we seem to have lost in other corners of government. And by that, I mean the burden that falls often to elected officials to actually educate their constituencies.
Right.
Right? That there, it's not just a unidirectional information flow, that there, we do look to elected officials like yourself and all of your colleagues to sort of not only understand the information, and this was pretty complicated with a lot of complex county history.
Right.
And state history. To not only understand those problems, but understand and be able to explain to folks the potential solutions and why some may or may not work, or may, in this case, what is and is not legally possible for the county. And I just, I was really, I stood back and by as your lawyer and thought, this is watching each of you think through this decision and go through that feedback and then education process with your constituents, I was very humbled by.
Right.
It really stood out to me as an exemplar, though difficult it may be,
right,
of what happens when we do this best.
Right. And as you know, Maggie, I'm an educator by trade. I've been teaching now for 32 years, and that is a big part of what I do in my professional life. And I really had to be educated myself as I was learning. I mean, it was a short time to really be brought up to speed. But I held two town halls, and I held them with the intent to educate and to also get information from the public, that give them an opportunity to ask our experts, you know, what were the reasons, how did we get here, and again, what type of impact it was going to have. So, you know, education was a big part of this, and I'll be honest, going onto the board floor that very day of our vote last Thursday, I was not certain which way I was going to go, mm-hmm, because of the push-pull that I was feeling, you know, from constituents on both sides of the issue.
Well, you and all of your colleagues that fought to educate yourself first because it was so complicated, and then fought and used all the tools at your disposal to try to educate your constituents and engage with them, you all have my utmost in admiration. It's not the easiest thing to do, because you're gonna see some people in some rooms or hear from some folks that are gonna call you some names or things that are pretty intense. How do you deal with the personalization, right? It seems to me, my two observations watching this effectively from an advisory, you know, subject matter expert seat in the county's process was, wow, these supervisors and the county executive really went to great lengths to try to educate and engage their constituents in that feedback process. But then how personal it all felt at times, I think, for each of you and for the county executive in different ways. How do you deal with what I think is sort of new in politics, which is the ad hominem sort of indictment or value judgment on, right, people that seems to be happening with greater frequency. And sometimes I myself engage in that and need to be held to account. But you, as an elected official, and you've served before,
right,
serve on a school board, how do you process that when people start attacking you as opposed to the idea or the issue?
Right. It is hard because I'm a human being, and it comes down to values. The way my parents raised us was to try to help our neighbors and our friends and just be, you know, giving to our community. And so when you have people on two sides of an issue, and I experienced this as a school board member, I've been serving now for 7 years, currently the president of the Greendale School Board. And when COVID went on, for instance,
right,
we were attacked for 2 years straight. And it was really hard not to take it personally and to basically, you know, understand that everyone had emotions involved right. in the situation. And so, you know, I'd be remiss if I said it didn't like hit home when people say things that are not nice. I don't even consider myself a politician, although I've been serving now for several years. I got into this because I felt I was a regular citizen that wanted to step up and, you know, give back to my community. And so when you have people on two sides of these issues, you know, you wish there wouldn't be the personal attacks, but sometimes I think that's, you know, what society today has kind of shown. I mean, we see it at the national level all the time with the negative ads and so forth, and it's come down to state and local elections. And, you know, I don't think it's acceptable. I mean, you know, I'd love to be able to see this part of politics stop and allow people to have meaningful conversations without the personal attacks. But I've lost a lot of sleep with this decision, as well as back when I was dealing with some of the school board things that we dealt with during COVID. Lost a lot of sleep because I care about what I do, and I want to make the best decisions and be informed and to help inform others. But I also have come to the realization that I cannot always make everybody happy all the time. I try to be balanced. I don't consider myself either a Democrat or a Republican. I kind of walk down the middle, but you know, people try to put you in a box when you're in an elected position. And then that's when the attacks seem to come, which I didn't really get attacks after my decision. Although I have been hearing rumblings of people wanting to run against me now.
Of course.
Right? And you need to know, I did not go in there making my decision worrying about my next bid for office. I don't think that is the way we should be thinking when we make our decisions. We should be thinking about what's best for, in this case, the county moving forward. And I got a lot of feedback on both sides. And eventually, I said it on the board floor, I was going to follow my heart and I was going to own the decision I made that day. And I do. I'm not second guessing it at this point, but I also know that it could have been very easy for me to take a no vote. As you know, you sit in the room, I vote towards the end of the order. And by the time it got to me, it had already passed. And I felt in some regards that it would have almost been cowardly of me to just take that easy way to say no, just to appease the people that were strongly telling me their no vote. I really wanted it to come down to my principles and the values that I felt were most important in making this decision. And hearing from individual constituents who would have been adversely impacted is really what drove my decision on the board floor that day.
I think right there, Anya, we're going to use much of what Kathy just said. Because to everyone listening, that is absolutely the point. I do not care what side of the aisle your politics may fall on. I have called myself a passionate pragmatist, fiscally conservative, socially liberal, a bag of all kinds of different things. And people try to label me as well all the time, Kathy. And I like to say that the people that I want to elect, that I want to support in elected offices, will do exactly what you just said, which is vote their head, their heart, and their gut. And vote not thinking about whether or not that vote will get them elected in the next cycle, but whether or not that vote is in the best interests of their constituents, but the people more generally for the jurisdiction that you represent. And for anyone that goes through that process and takes those words seriously, which you do, Kathy, I can tell, you will always have my deepest thanks. And I think any elected official who does that and does that meaningfully as much as they possibly can and hopefully all of the time, those are the principles that we hope to see in our elected officials. And I hope everybody is screaming at their radio and saying, yes, that's what we want.
Can I add something?
Please, yes.
So there were two residents that really helped me make my final decision because I was so torn and honestly felt I might have even taken a no vote going in there that day. But they reached out in the 2 days, well, the morning of and the day before, both of which have disabilities. One is Kevin from my district, and he's blind, and he would have been impacted by the paratransit services being cut. And as well as an individual by the name of Nancy, who called me that morning and never in her wildest dreams would have thought I would have called her a half an hour before I actually went on to the board floor. But I do have a policy of getting back to people within 24 hours. And I wanted her to know I was going to go in there and try to make my best decision. And at that point, I told her, I said, I'm not even certain which way I'm going to vote. And so she knew I was going in there possibly thinking of a no vote. But her voice had been heard. And I think so many times right now in our recent days of politics, people don't feel their voice has any input. And I heard every voice that reached out to me. And I tried to listen to everyone and weigh out the pros and the cons.
That's what it always should be, Kathy. Can you stick around for another segment?
Sure, I'll be happy.
Awesome. It's great. The Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked, everybody. Back with more in a moment.
We come out and look like Princess Diana on the street. Hey, yo, Ice.
Stop playing with them, Riot.
Finisher. Like, keep it a stack. Move on, cause they know I got beans. They be trying,
welcome
I don't
back,
give a
everybody.
Damn, I'm still
I
damn
am Maggie
I
Dawn, and you
am.
Are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm so glad that my guests can stick around for another segment. If you are on the line, stay there. I'm going to carve out a couple minutes before end of show to get to you, 844-967-2789. If we end up running out of time, because there's another really huge topic that I wanted to talk to my friend Kathy about, don't worry, because I'm back tomorrow, and I'll finish putting together my thoughts on voting rights. And let me just state the values that I believe should undergird all of our voting laws in case you can't tune in tomorrow. And that is that your constitutional right to vote should be reasonably regulated. And by that I mean the regulations should not tend to benefit or hurt one party or one demographic more than the other. They should make sense. It should ensure that we have faith in our elections, but that discussion always has to be based on facts. And when people that have been in the rooms with GOP candidates and the GOP party over the years have come out publicly and said their explicit tactic is to get fewer people to vote, and folks are on record saying that, that's the value that I object to. I don't share that value. My objective is the most people voting that legally are entitled to. And let's extrapolate from there. So if we don't get there in the balance of the show today, I'll return to that tomorrow. We'll talk about some of the specific legislation that the GOP proposed here in the state of Wisconsin. But we just heard from Supervisor Kathy Vinson, who served on the Greendale School Board, and my apologies to folks from Greendale and Glendale. The Greendale School Board for 7 years, then raised her hand to run for county board supervisor after coming through COVID on a school board. I don't know what she was thinking. And showed up just in time to take a sales tax vote at the county. And Kathy, you may end up hearing your voice again on our radio station, because I think the way that you explained how you approached your vote is what every American actually hopes their elected officials are doing.
Right.
You said it as if it was such a simple matter. But I was freaking out, wanted to scream into the microphone like, yes, amen, because that's what it should be.
Right.
Right. Not in self-interest, in service.
And honestly, I don't want to let anyone down in my vote, but I realize that there are two sides to all these issues. So sometimes you're just going to have to follow that path you said, head and heart. And it is truly that, because you hear these voices on both sides, but it comes down to you're the one that is placing that vote.
Yep.
Or I'm the one that's placing that vote.
Yes, in this instance, I just sat there eating my popcorn watching it. I was like, well, this is going to be interesting. But listen, the last subject I wanted to talk about was another what I would suggest, profile and courage, Kathy. I think the vote that you took this past week and the colleagues that joined you, especially those that were coming from constituencies with sharply divergent viewpoints, really engaged in an act of courage when you took the vote last week. But you also very recently shared publicly some of your own personal mental health, about your own personal mental health journey. And that, again, was incredibly moving and humbling to me. And I wanted to give you another chance to speak a little bit about that and maybe even a little bit about what it's been like after coming out so publicly and sharing a bit of your story. So tell us about you, Kathy.
Yeah. So I basically have been challenged over the last 30 years, at least since I was formally diagnosed back in 1999. I was having some struggles after my son was born. He's my second child. And just noticed something wasn't right. And I just went in and sought out some help to find out what was going on. And I don't take this lightly even now. I know I did a public interview back in May during Mental Health Awareness Month, and I chose to go publicly with some struggles that I have had with mental illness over the course of my life. It is a journey I continue on. It's not something that's ever going to go away completely, but I have gotten to a point in my life of acceptance, and I also feel as an elected official and an educator, as a teacher for 32 years, I have a platform, if you will, and an ability to help others out by sharing my story, because there are many others that are struggling out there. So back in 1999, I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. At the time, I didn't really know much about it at all. I did a lot of research over the years. I continue to, especially when you see all those commercials on TV and they're pushing different kinds of medications. And
yeah, you're old enough to remember with me that there was a time when you didn't see pharmaceuticals directly advertised to patients.
No. Especially not for mental health.
Absolutely.
I mean, that was like taboo, if you will. And I have gone through a series of medications and therapists and, you know, support networks. I've had family and friends along the way who I can truly thank for their support. At first, it was hard for some of them even to accept or understand what was going on, because you can't really talk about these things. It's there's a stigma attached. And, you know, that was my biggest fear. Even in sharing my story last month, or in May, I should say, was, you know, what is this going to do in the aftermath? Because I'm going to share something very personal, and people have their thoughts on mental health and mental illness in general. And I just decided that I was at a point where I felt ready to share where I'm at with that, and also to try to make some difference as a lawmaker. Now, I did have two resolutions that went before the full board. I think all of them actually approved them. Like, I think it was unanimous, and I believe most of them even signed on as co-sponsors to both of them, which I was very honored.
And those were directed at mental health.
Mental health, both of them. One was for adding more financial support to our schools for in the area of mental health, and the other was just designating it as Mental Health Awareness Month. That's something I kind of want to come back to every year because it's not something that's going to go away. It's not once a month. It's something that's continuous for many individuals in our society.
Yeah, I really think, first of all, thank you, Kathy, for sharing. I really, it's underestimated, I think, because sometimes you don't hear from the people who may be inspired, or it becomes one of the things that they've heard that eventually makes them feel comfortable enough to share their own stories. Since young adulthood, I have suffered from varying bouts of very serious levels of depression and almost crippling anxiety throughout my life. So I was incredibly moved by your story. And yes, let's keep talking about these things every day until people are getting the help that they deserve. Thank you so much for being here, Kathy. I cannot believe that we're out of time. I would love to have you back sometime. It was a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Come back tomorrow. I'll tie it all back together. It's been a real pleasure. This has been the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Maggie Dawn. Tune in tomorrow, 6 o'clock. I'll be live with Anya here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Still getting money, I know who I am. Trying to be low, he gonna hit up my gram. If he smart, he gonna act like a fan. Thinking you bigger, they got your head gas. Slow, so I get him a pass. Catch it.